Good morning, everyone. The State of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order. It is March 19th, 2025 at 9 a.m. The meeting will take place both virtually and in person via Zoom. The board meeting is located at 1740 West Adams Street, Phoenix, Arizona, Boardroom C. Ms. Vander, may I get a roll call of all members present, please? Are they? Are we good?
Yep.
Okay.
Should our microphones be off? Okay.
Okay, there are three members present in person. There is a quorum. Ms. Vanderveen.
Ms. Powell.
Yes.
Are you on mute? The speaker.
Is it her?
Yeah.
Everything looks right. Sorry, we're just having some technical difficulties here. We'll fix in just a second.
No problem.
Okay. Now I think we should.
Okay. Where were we? Oh, yes, we have a quorum with three. We will now state any conflicts of interest for which any of the board members may have and be recusing themselves. If you have conflict members, please state the tab number and the reason for your recusal. If you have no conflicts of interest, then state that as such. We will start with Dr. Bennett.
Chairman, I have no conflicts of interest. This is Wayne Bennett for the record.
Mr. Turbinson, I have no conflicts.
Very good. Let the record reflect that the board. Oh, this is Angela Powell, and I have no conflicts. Let the record reflect that the board members have now been furnished with investigative reports and exhibits for each matter on the board agenda. Would each member please indicate, as your name is called, whether you have reviewed the board investigative materials for each item on today's agenda? We'll begin with Dr. Bennett.
Madam Chairman, this is with Dr. Bennett. I have reviewed the materials.
Mr. Turbinson.
This is Mitch Turbinson. I have reviewed the materials.
And Angela Powell, I have reviewed the materials. Okay. My name is Angela Powell, and I'm the public member and the board chair. I would like to welcome all of our newly licensed chiropractic licensees to the board meeting. Thank you for attending. We hope that you will find this both informative and helpful. You are required to attend for a full 3 hours, and the staff will let you know when the 3 hours is up and you can be dismissed. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone to please turn your cell phones off, put them on silent. If you are appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until you are called or your matter is called. For those attending the meeting in person, vending machines are right outside the boardroom C and restrooms across from the elevator. This is an open meeting and it is being recorded. The audio from the meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure to state your full name when you are speaking on the record and speak slowly and clearly into the microphone. To protect the complainant's privacy, please refer to the complainant or patient during the meeting by their initials only. Okay, we'll start with tab one. This is a motion for rehearing on the matter of Herbert Schillerstrom.
Okay.
Tillerson. Okay. This is the time set aside for the board's consideration of Dr. Herbert Schillerstrom's request for review or rehearing of the board's order issued in the case number 2020-036 and 2022-002. Dr. Schillerstrom, please unmute and state your name for the record.
This is Joshua Greer on behalf of Dr. Schillerstrom.
Can you hear him?
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. You are represented by counsel. Okay. Use us just one more minute, another technical problem. Are we set?
I think so.
Okay. This time is set for the board's consideration of Dr. Herbert Schillerstrom's request for review or rehearing of the board order issued in case number 2020-036 and 2022-002. Dr. Schillerstrom, please unmute and state your name for the record.
This is Joshua Greer on behalf of Dr. Schillerstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Greer. I'm Angela Powell, chairman of the board. The other members of the board and staff will now introduce themselves. Starting with Dr. Bennett, please.
Dr. Gwen Bennett.
Ms. Shervinson.
And Angela Powell. Also present is Ms. Terry Smith. Independent legal advisor under the board's rules regarding review and rehearing, Arizona Administrative Code R4-7-305A, the board may grant a review or rehearing of the board's decision for any of the following seven causes, materially affecting your rights. The first one, irregularity in the administrative proceedings of the board or any other abuse of discretion that deprives the professional of a fair hearing. Misconduct of the board. Number three, accident or surprise that could not have been prevented by ordinary prudence. Number four, newly discovered material evidence that could not have been evidence that could not with reasonable diligence have been discovered and produced at the original hearing. Number five, excessive or insufficient penalties. Number six, error in the admission or rejection of evidence or other errors of law occurring at the administrative hearing, or the decision is not justified by the evidence contrary to law. If the board grants the request, it will specifically the grounds for the review or rehearing and cover only those matters so specific. For example, if the board granted a review on the grounds of excessive penalty, the board would then review the penalty to determine whether it is in fact excessive. After reviewing the penalty, the board would then vote to either affirm the penalty as previously ordered or modify the previous penalty. If the board denies reviewing or rehearing, the proceeding is conducted. This proceeding is being transcribed by a court reporter. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly.
The proceeding is concluded.
I'm sorry, did I restate that? If the board denies reviews or rehearing, the proceeding is concluded. I apologize. The proceeding is being transcribed by a court reporter. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly. Only one person speaks at a time. Okay. Doctor, we've read your request for review or rehearing. You have 10 minutes for an argument. Please specifically state which of the 7 grounds you are relying on and why. Mr. Greer?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Our petition is set forth on the papers. At the outset, does anyone have any questions that I can answer? Thank you. The board should rehear this case for 3 reasons. First, the board should rehear this case to correct the obvious errors in the board's order. And the most obvious error in the board's findings is that it sent Dr. Schillerstrom a letter, a notice of a board order 5 weeks before the board actually prepared it. This is an obvious error. There is no such thing as a time machine. The board found that it sent the board order to Dr. Schillerstrom on December 20th. However, it's undisputed that the board order was not finalized until January. Staff at the hearing acknowledged that this is an impossibility. Despite it being an impossibility, the board found that Dr. Schillerstrom was sent a copy of the board order before it was issued. This is an obvious error, and the board should correct this obvious error. You can't issue an order to a licensee before the board issues it. The next obvious error is to correct the board's decision that the board's determination that Dr. Schillerstrom did not comply with the subpoena. At the hearing, the board, Dr. Schillerstrom presented uncontested evidence that he had complied with the subpoena. The board could not refute that evidence. And despite this, the board found, in the face of no evidence at all, that Dr. Schillerstrom did not comply with the subpoena. This needs to be corrected. Because the board's record is not supported by the evidence, the board must rehear the case to correct these obvious errors. Second, the board should rehear the case because the board's decision was the result of extreme misconduct of the board's staff. Our papers outline the numerous errors that the board staff committed in the presentation of Dr. Schillerstrom's case. These errors always appear to the detriment of Dr. Schillerstrom. I don't need to go through all of them, but I will note in a transcript bears record that board staff admitted to and conceded most of these errors. I will dwell on one important error. The board staff never attempted to reach out to the patients at issues in these cases. This failure is incredible. Part of the reason Dr. Schillerstrom has been disciplined is because the board determined that the treatment that he performed either did not happen or was conducted improperly. How the board can reach that conclusion without talking to the patients is mind-blowing. The board staff had the identities of the patients. The patients' attorneys even reached out to board staff to offer themselves as witnesses in this matter, and the board staff never reached out to the patients to determine what treatment occurred, whether they were satisfied with the treatment, whether the treatment is supported by the records. How the board could reach the conclusion that it reached with never talking to the patients is impossible. I don't think that the board staff generally does a poor job. It appears that the board staff, and this is borne out in the record, had a certain animus towards Dr. Schillerstrom, and I think that colored a lot of the board staff's actions in this case. Third, the penalty is extreme. Revocation is an extreme remedy. Here, there is no harm to the public. There were no patient complaints. Not even a specter of public harm. The board made no findings that anyone in the public was ever harmed. Like I said, the board did not even talk to the patients at issue. The primary allegation levied at Dr. Schillerstrom, and the reason that this case got to where it was, result to allegations that Dr. Schillerstrom lied about the renewal of his license. The ALJ and the board found that on that issue, Dr. Schillerstrom was entirely correct. It was not Dr. Schillerstrom that failed to renew his license. It was the board that failed to process the license. And indeed, the ALJ found that the board attempted to cover up its tracks by submitting a letter into the file, which the ALJ found there was no evidence that that was ever sent to Dr. Schillerstrom. This failed process is what brought this case to the board, not the patient's complaint, this allegation that Dr. Schillerstrom was unlicensed. So what do you have left? You have a record-keeping violation. That's basically what this case is. And the penalty for that is revocation. That is an excessive penalty. Again, it appears this penalty is based on the board's animus towards Dr. Schillerstrom. The board should hear this case to provide a penalty that is appropriate to the minimal harm that occurred here. This is a case that shouldn't have gotten to revocation. The board staff has an axe to grind with Dr. Schillerstrom. The board never talked to the patients, and the board revoked a license when there was no evidence of any patient harm or public endangerment. For those reasons, the board should rehear the case, issue a penalty appropriate with the minor violations that exist, and get rid of this specter of amnes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions?
Of Mr. Rear? No.
Okay. That's explained?
No, nor do I have questions with regard to either of those. Or perhaps some question of with regard to, I guess, my question in general is, aside from what I just heard is not consistent with what I think happened, I'm pretty sure what didn't happen and did. But in the event that this case was addressed by this board over a long period of time, it was then went before an administrative law judge. The conclusion of the administrative law judge was consistent, and it was moved forward. I see no reason to disagree with it. And I don't know that the egregiousness of what went on certainly justifies what this board's decision was. It was not just a record-keeping error, and it certainly was reinforced by the administrative law judge.
Dr. Chair, I think perhaps before we get into the deliberations, we should allow the state to provide their presentation and then ask any questions and open to deliberations at that time.
Okay. My apologies, Mr. Hutchinson.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Casey Hutchinson for the state. I made better arguments in my response than I'm sure I'll make here, but I'll just touch on a few elements of Mr. Schillerstrom's argument. First, I'll just briefly Dr. Schillerstrom argued that the board had an axe to grind and that they shouldn't have gone to a hearing. Well, if members of the board recall, the board offered Dr. Schillerstrom a consent agreement to avoid going to hearing, and it went unsigned. There was an opportunity for Dr. Schillerstrom to avoid going to a hearing, not the board's first choice. Secondly, the seven grounds for rehearing review in R47305 mostly relate to problems with the hearing itself, which makes sense. If you're arguing that a new hearing needs to happen, then the reason for the new hearing should be problems with the hearing. Dr. Schillerstrom's arguments, on the other hand, mostly are complaints with the investigation. His problems with the investigation were litigated at the hearing. That was the purpose of the hearing. The ALJ heard all of his arguments about the misconduct of the board, and the errors in the investigation and the purported animus, et cetera, that was heard and considered by the ALJ at the hearing. With respect to those errors, and the specifically the one Dr. Schillerstrom mentioned about the time machine, that relates to an alleged violation, but one that was not found by the ALJ. So it has no bearing on the ultimate conclusion or the discipline recommended by the ALJ and imposed by the board. And to the extent that it was found, there's still no, at least in my reading of the rules, I don't see that providing any basis for rehearing or review under these seven grounds provided by the rule. Next, with respect to the board's misconduct, I understand may have made Dr. Shilton's case hearing more robust if these witnesses were there to testify on behalf of him, but it's not the board's job to go seek out friendly witnesses to the licensee. Dr. Schillerstrom very well could have done that. They could have testified. Court made his case, and that's not that. There's no problem with that, such that rehearing review is warranted. And it was not so. Dr. Schillerstrom argued that this was simply a record keeping problem, or it wasn't about what I meant to say was with these patients. Dr. Schillerstrom was not disciplined because of the treatment provided. Dr. Schillerstrom both in one side of his mouth said, well, it's a treatment problem. The board had a problem. He provided great treatment, but then later on in his argument, concedes, well, it was a record-keeping problem. There was no issue with the treatment. Nothing was alleged that was a problem with the treatment. It was a record-keeping problem, which brings me to the last argument about the penalty. It wasn't just a record-keeping problem, although that was sustained. It was Dr. Schillerstrom's failure to comply with board orders, and he testified himself at the hearing to the ALJ of his 30-year disciplinary history. He demonstrated to the ALJ and to the board that he's unregulatable, which that had he no disciplinary history, I doubt that either the ALJ or the board would come to the conclusion that revocation was the appropriate discipline. But of course, that factors into what the appropriate discipline should be. And for those reasons, I have another point that just escaped me, but I've made my argument. For those reasons, I think the board should deny the Schillerstrom's motion, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Hutchison, what effect, if any, does Dr. Schillerstrom or any representative not attending our October 23rd, 2024 board meeting where we considered the ALJ's recommendation have on this motion for rehearing?
Legally, I'm not sure it does, but of course, I think that's something the board could properly consider that answers your question.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Dr. Bennett?
Madam Chairman, may I be heard on those issues?
Yeah.
Thank you. It's very rare that, the state's attorney makes my argument. I think what you just heard from Mr. Hutchison is exactly the reasons why the board should rehear this case. One, to tell the board that because Dr. Schillerstrom rejected the board's settlement, he should be revoked, shows the animus. And two, playing on this history of alleged history of of revocation, these are the exact reasons why the board should rehear the case. I'm answering Mr. Turbinson's question. The fact that Dr. Schillerstrom, unless the board had questions, which I understood the board did not have any questions from Dr. Schillerstrom at the October hearing, we understood the board was just going to accept the ALJ's findings. And we exercised our right to petition to rehear in the event the court, the board did not. But this is exactly the reasons why. Well, what you heard from Mr. Hutchinson is exactly the reasons why you should rehear this case, to ensure that Dr. Schillerstrom, receives a fair hearing. Just looking at the board's order, the board found, without any evidence at all, and in fact, in direct contravention to the evidence presented at the hearing, that Dr. Schillerstrom did not comply with the subpoena. The evidence presented at the hearing, which was uncontested, is that Dr. Schillerstrom showed up to the board on August 23rd, hand-delivered to Jamie Shapiro.
We've heard all that, and we appreciate
Okay. I'm just addressing Mr. Hutchinson's comments.
No, I understand. And those were not the reasons. There was not a single reason. There's probably in general statement, it was continual inability to be regulated.
I understand that, Madam Chair. Are you cutting me off?
No, I'm not cutting you off.
Okay.
I'm saying we heard that, and you don't have to repeat it. We got it the first time. Okay? I understand your position, or the doctor's position. I think we have that. So let us just talk about it, deliberate, and we'll make a decision, okay?
I understand, but I do need to address some of the points. For example, what Mr. Hutchinson said was that this wasn't for one thing. Well, the board found that Dr. Schillerstrom failed to comply with the subpoena. If the board is not finding that, and the board shouldn't because it is not supported by the evidence, the board should rehear this case to correct that finding. And if the board, it may be, Madam Chair, that, the fact that you may reach the same decision, removing that finding. I understand that. But right now, the board's finding, and there's no evidence to support the board's finding. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Turbinson.
Mr. Greer, you mentioned that in the October 23rd, 2024 board meeting, you were under an impression that Dr. Schillerstrom did not need to attend. What can you explain that understanding?
Well, I've been to, I've done this for a long time. I understand that, the board, a member's respondent is never required to attend. He was notified that the board was going to consider it. We reviewed the decision. We could see the writing on the wall. And so it was a decision. Dr. Schillerstrom doesn't have limitless resources. I'm a very expensive friend. And he made the decision not to attend and to file a petition for rehearing. That was.
So there's a conscious decision not to raise a lot of these issues raised in this motion for rehearing before the board in October, before the board actually adopted the ALJ's recommendation. Is that what I'm getting?
We raised the issues. I don't know. I guess if you're telling me that, hey, if we would have raised these issues, the board would have changed its mind, maybe I should have attended. But there was a decision not to attend the October 2024 meeting and to file a petition for rehear. That was the decision that was made. I agree with Mr. Hutchinson that doesn't affect how the board should consider this motion. If it was wrong in October, it's still wrong today.
Okay,
thank you.
I would just make a comment that the history is not alleged to have been a long and consistent and extensive history of being unregulatable. It is well documented in the findings that virtually every step of the way, this doctor has not cooperated in any way and demonstrated very clearly that his behavior was that he's unregulatable as a provider. And that's the basis upon which a lot of the decisions were made.
Would you agree, Mr. Turbinson?
Yes.
Consider us to have deliberated.
All right, are you ready for a motion?
Yes, I would entertain a motion at this time.
Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. I move that we deny Herbert Schillerstrom's request for review or rehearing based on the fact that there's no basis.
Do I have a second?
This is Ms. Turbinson. I second.
Having a motion and a second, the motion passes.
Madam Chair, you can actually call for a vote, but I just want to clarify, Dr. Bennett, the basis for your motion. What you're saying, I think what I heard you say was that your decision, your motion is based on your opinion that the respondent failed to meet his burden to demonstrate if your rehearing is appropriate.
Correct, but there's no basis for that.
Thank you. And this should be a roll call vote.
Okay. Deputy.
Mr. Mitchell Jurgensen?
Aye.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Aye.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Aye.
We have three ayes and no nays. The motion passes.
The board has voted to deny your request for review or rehearing. The board has voted to deny your request for a review or rehearing, Dr. Schillerstrom. And
I think there's one other piece to the script, paragraph 14, the first paragraph.
Right. you'll receive an order in the mail within about 2 or 3 weeks. Your time to appeal to the Superior Court does not begin to run until the order is mailed to you. If the motion to, excuse me, you will receive an order in the mail within about 2 or 3 weeks. That order will set forth the date and time.
It's that first paragraph and then there's the very last paragraph.
I'm sorry. I won't repeat the first one, I'll just order the last one. If you have any questions, Dr. or Mr. Greer, please call the board executive director, Alyssa Vanderveen, at the board's office on another day. The board's phone number can be found on the board's website, cairoboard.az.gov. This concludes our proceedings. Thank you. Ms. Vanderveen, we start with the Senate bill.
Ms. Powell, can we maybe read that for 5 minutes so I can have a discussion with the RAG bill?
Certainly.
Thank you.
5 minutes. We're taking a break. Session. We're back in session. It is 9:31. We will now go to our next agenda item, the consent agenda. Items listed on the consent agenda are item 7 and tab number 2. In the matter of cases recommended for dismissal, the case number 2023-039, Shireen Harib, I hope I pronounced that correctly, case number 2023-036, Ryan Edward Hicks, case number 2024-035, David Leopold Lostein, and case number 2023-048, Nicholas F. McCann. Cases recommended for dismissal with non-disciplinary advisory letter, case number 2023-014, Jacob Hansen. Case recommended for opening a complaint and opening an investigation are 2025-008, Justine Rando, D.C. Case recommended for acceptance of proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement, case number 2023-047, David Welch. Item 7K, application for licensure, recommended to grant licensure application 25-1281, Johnson Thomas Kahn. Application number 1161, Gary Cook Powell. And application 1046, Tarek Raj Kowal. Forgive my pronunciation. Items on the consent agenda appear with a recommendation from the board staff. board members have received all the materials and the recommendations, both. We are prepared to vote on each matter as they appear on the agenda. Pulling the matter means that you are a party or a complainant to that matter and do not agree with the recommendation, and you would like up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you do wish to pull the matter, please raise your hand so that we can note that you wish to pull the matter. If the matter is removed from a consent agenda, it will likely have to be re-agendized for a later hearing. Does anyone have any issues? Nope. Okay. No one's raised their hand, so a party or complainant for the agenda item number, whichever. All of us.
Yeah, I think you would say, seeing no hands raised. To pull any items off the consent agenda, the board will proceed to voting on them. And then you can just vote. You just need a motion to vote on them as a group.
Madam, I move that the consent agenda be approved as recommended by staff.
I have a second.
This is Ms. Sherbinson, I second.
The motion to accept. Do I list all the tasks or just list it? Just fill all these.
So your motion is to accept tab number 2, agenda items 7A, 7B, 7C, 7F, and 7K as on the agenda. Is that your motion?
This is Dr. Bennett, and yes, that is my motion.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, and this is Mitch Sturman.
Thank you for the information. The board will take it into consideration. Am I skipping ahead?
We need to vote on the motion.
Okay. Do we need a roll call vote?
All in favor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The motion has been accepted. The board staff's recommendations for the agenda, and the motion passes.
Moving on to tab number 3.
Okay. Tab number 3. Next on the agenda is item 8, tab number 3, which is the initial action case number 2023-046 and 2025-004, Dr. William Gunderman, D.C. Dr. Gunderman, are you present today? Second call, Dr. Gunderman.
Chair, it's not
appear
that Dr.
Gunderman
has
planned
in the
okay.
meeting room.
All right. So we will just vote on this issue. Or board brief, Ms.
Anderby. The summary of investigation and facts and allegations are a violation of a board order. And that is the only allegation that is report. So if you have any questions for me.
Dr. Bennett?
Yes, Ms. Anderby, this is Dr. Bennett. You violated a board order. My understanding of this is repeated violations of multiple board orders.
It was a single board order, but it was the board order in its entirety. So
there were multiple points of which mm-hmm. all related to the same board order,
yes.
But they were he was specifically ordered to do quite a large list of things, and he did absolutely none of them, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Turminson?
And we have no explanation.
He did not respond to the request for information and then the subsequent subpoena. That board staff sent him, and then he was sent a subpoena to appear and testify today. He did not respond.
Shall we deliberate? Dr. Bennett?
Mr. Turpinson?
Nothing for me.
All right.
Madam Chair, I move that this matter be moved to a formal hearing with the intent to revoke.
Do I have a second?
Ms. Turpinson, I second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
I was just going to say that roll call.
It has to be a roll call. Okay. Roll call vote.
Mr. Mitchell Turminson?
Aye.
Dr. Mason?
Aye.
Ms. Angela?
Aye.
Having three ayes and no nays, the motion
passes. Okay. We'll move on to tab four. Case 2025-005, Gregory Melvin, D.C. Next on the agenda, and I'm tab number four, IMA tab number four, which is the initial action for case 2025-005, Dr. Gregory Melvin. Dr. Melvin, are you present today? Dr. Melvin? Okay. Did we have any indication you would be here today?
We do not receive any indication. The board staff says the request for information, a subsequent subpoena for information, and then a subpoena to appear and testify today.
Okay.
We have yet to receive a response from this individual.
So we get a board brief?
Yes, ma'am. The investigative facts and allegations are fact number one, violating any state statute or rule, to the practice of chiropractic, and the violation would be practicing without a license, which would be a violation of ARS 32927A1 and 3. Violating directly or indirectly any provisions of this chapter, practicing without a license, same statutory violations. Any practice contrary to the recognized standard of chiropractic. Any practice that constitutes a danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public. Using PMMCP without first passing the exam and being certified by the board. Unprofessional conduct likely to deceive or defraud the public or knowingly making false or misleading statements to a patient. Unprofessional conduct likely to deceive or defraud the public as it relates to intentionally misrepresenting the effectiveness of a device. Unprofessional conduct likely to deceive or defraud the public, promoting diagnostic testing for experimental purposes or financial benefit of the licensee. Unprofessional conduct likely to defeat or defraud the public, having action taken against a professional license in another jurisdiction for reasons related to unprofessional conduct and any limitation or restriction of the license, formation, suspension, revocation, surrender of this license in this or another jurisdiction. Unprofessional conduct likely to defeat or defraud the public, providing substandard care due to a failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established.
Okay. Is the complainant with the initials NB present today? NB, if you're present, please let us know. Okay, looks like we don't have NB here today. So we can't ask her any questions. Board members, do you want to deliberate on this?
Yes, Madam Chairman, this is Wayne Bennett. I have one question for our Attorney General. And just by way of context, what we have here, according to the record that I reviewed, is that this doctor surrendered his license in California for doing exactly what he then crossed the border and began to do here in the state of Arizona, where he's not licensed at all. Although that consists of its facts. And so the question that I have really is not so much about our obligation with regard to Dr. Melvin. My question is, what is our jurisdictional responsibility relative to the practice of this thermal imaging, which is it was regulated heavily in California, and now it's in Arizona, and do we have any kind of jurisdictional responsibility relative to that?
Well, the favorite lawyer answer is It depends on what thermal imaging is, how it's utilized, and whether it's the practice of chiropractic as defined in the statute.
Okay, presuming that our board would agree with California's board, which I'm pretty sure it would, that this is not within the chiropractic scope of practice, and then we have a whole bunch of other egregious stuff beyond that. But I guess what I'm asking is, do we have an obligation to do beyond dealing with, you know, getting Dr. Melvin to stop doing what he's doing immediately take matters relative to that, take take a step relative to that. Do we have to, there are still these imaging centers going on, but it's not, do we have any responsibility relative to perhaps referring these matters to a law enforcement agency, or there doesn't appear to be any other regulatory board, there's no other licensed practitioner, I don't think, in these clinics that we could refer to their board relative to. And so that's why I feel like we're kind of in a quandary here in terms of what our obligation is relative to that knowledge that we now have.
Yes, so the board exists to safeguard the health, safety, and welfare of the public. So if you're aware of something that, in the board's opinion, could pose at least some kind of risk to any of those things, then the board should do something with that information. I don't, as you mentioned, I don't know if there's any state board that regulates this kind of thing, but I do know that the FDA does, and the FDA has been at least involved with Mr. Melvin. So I think that might be the best fit.
Okay, thank you. That helps me. For the record, part of this is that we've seen this before. They're saying this is an FDA-approved device, as if that means, and then they're purporting it to be, the FDA has approved it for the use of curative or diagnostic or whatever. All the FDA approval is that it doesn't hurt people when you do it to them. that's what their FDA approval is. But they're misrepresenting it pretty clearly, pretty blatantly, as being more than that. And so then it would be appropriate for us to refer the matter to them. Is that correct? Mr. Turbinson, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, is your question getting to, you know, there are other individuals involved in this practice. Some don't appear to be. One appears to be a certified thermographer. That is. And then the other is a doctor who presumably is regulated by an Arizona board. And so is your thought more widespread of reporting this also to the DO board possibly, or
is that the credential of the other provider?
MD and MD and DO.
Mr. Thompson, if I may, further research on that doctor has found him to be
safe. Oh.
So he's
okay.
Not.
That's not an issue.
And then the other thought was, it does not, Attorney General's office have a consumer protection?
That is correct, although I don't know a whole lot about it. I'm not part of it, but we definitely do.
That might be the other avenue here for this other individual who maybe is also not claiming to be a DC.
And from the research that we did during the investigation, it appears though the thermographic, whatever they're certified by
Dr. Mullen.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
How convenient. Okay, so maybe I could just make a motion and then Pete can criticize it if it's refined. All right, so I would move that we issue a cease and desist order and mail that cease and desist order to all of the Arizona locations of this clinic and to Dr. Melvin, if we can find him, and then refer the matter to the appropriate law enforcement agency, the FDA, and the
Attorney General's
Office. AG's Office of Consumer Affairs. Would they then, this is not part of my motion, it's an aside, would they, the Department of Consumer Affairs, then be in a position to make the appropriate referral to the regulatory board if it was a DO or whatever?
Yeah, if they come to come into some sort of additional information, they can certainly make that
pretty straightforward. Okay, then that's my question.
Okay, do I have a second?
This is Ms. Sherman, it's a nice second.
We have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The motion passes. Should we go on to tab 5 or does anyone want to break? Okay, we'll move on then. Next on the agenda, tab 5. 2023-041, Bryce L. and F. Neff, D.C. It is an initial action of case number 2023-041, Dr. Bryce Allen Neff. Dr. Neff, are you present?
Yes.
Okay.
Can we approach, if that's okay?
I'm sorry?
Can we approach?
Please. Are you represented by legal counsel?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Please introduce yourself, doctor, for the record.
My name is Dr. Bryce Allen Neff.
You don't want to push the button.
My name is Dr. Bryce Allen Neff.
And go ahead.
My name is Sarah Bennett. I'm an attorney on behalf, as well as my colleague Marty McCarthy to my left.
Okay, welcome.
I'm sorry, didn't you get the second name?
Margaret McCarthy.
McCarthy. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Vanderveen, can I get a board brief, please?
Yes, the investigative facts and allegations are improper billing, making false statements, misleading advertising, working outside the scope of chiropractic, and failure to maintain adequate records.
Okay. Dr. Neff, the board members have read your response and to the complaint. You have 5 minutes or your attorney to make an opening statement.
Thank you, Manager. Dr. Neff takes this matter extremely seriously. He has been practicing as a chiropractor for over 20 years and he has seen records. Aside from his instant complaint, he has never received a single board complaint or had any disciplinary action in the past. This is his very first time before the esteemed board. Before I briefly address the allegations, I'd like to clarify the fact that although the investigative report indicates that 2 complaints were filed, we are only aware of how one complaint has been filed by CAT. If a separate complaint has been filed by AH or anyone else, and the board is considering a separate complaint, we expect to request a copy of that complaint and an opportunity to adequately respond to that complaint before the board issues a decision. We'd also like to point out the fact that the petition in this case has raised no complaints about Dr. Nash's actual care and treatment. Dr. Neff's provision of chiropractic care was appropriate and clinically indicated. In fact, the patient admittedly improved from the care provided. This is not an issue. Dr. Neff has not engaged in improper billing. The patient was not overcharged and is not owed any money. Dr. Neff has not committed insurance fraud or refused to respond to any insurance claim. An incredibly detailed forensic analysis of the patient's billing records and EOBs was performed, which confirmed that the office correctly billed the patient's insurance company for actual services and treatments provided. It is imperative to note that Dr. Neff's office suffered a devastating and debilitating ransomware attack during the relevant time frame, which rendered many patient records entirely unrecoverable and forced his office to try to piece together patient charts page by page. Dr. Neff also experienced unanticipated staff turnover and was forced to cycle through several billing providers during this time. These factors explain why some treatment modality records are missing from the patient's chart. However, Dr. Neff understands these are not excuses and accepts full responsibility for these missing records. He has done everything he can to resolve this issue and prevent this from happening again in the future. Dr. Neff did not make false statements, intentionally advertise the information, or work outside the scope of chiropractic. During the relevant time period, Dr. Neff had an integrated practice where the office employed a nurse practitioner to provide medical services, including TRT injections and TT injections. Dr. Neff has never performed any of these therapeutic modalities. He has since removed all references to TRP from his website, as he can no longer offer in his office. He has also removed all references to physiotherapy and physical therapy from his website as well, as these had inadvertently been included on the website in error. He has worked diligently with his website developer to revamp his website to make sure that it's accurate and up to date, which it now is. In addition to overhauling his website, Dr. Neff has taken additional steps to safeguard office practices moving forward, including one, transitioning his office over to ClinicMind, a combined EHR billing software program to streamline the EHR billing process. Two, performing internal office-wide audits by having staff review patient records from January 2nd, 2023 to the present to make sure that those records are accurate and up to date. And three, instructing the firm, a medical billing management service and consulting company, to review patient accounts and immediately notify him if any patient reimbursements are necessary so that he can pay such payment reimbursements quickly. He has been proactive in having his billing service conduct a forensic analysis, provided direction to office staff to review each and every single patient chart, and implemented new steps to safeguard his practice with the AHR billing software. Although these measures have come at considerable expense to Dr. Neff, he is taking every necessary precaution to address these issues. He has not engaged in any unprofessional or dishonorable conduct warranting disciplinary action in this case. We respect the request of the board to dismiss the complaint in its entirety, and we appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you. Is the complainant with the initials CB present? Second call, CB, if you're present, unmute. Do you have any indication? No. Okay. All right, questions, Dr. Bennett?
I have many questions. versus the board staff, I saw a reference to an AH complaint, but I saw no materials and did not review anything relative to that complaint, and I just want to confirm that as far as my understanding is, this is specifically pertaining to the complaint from CB. Is that correct understanding?
That is my understanding.
Can you confirm that for me? That's correct. I mean, there were multiple hundreds of pages of records that we reviewed here for this, and I didn't see any in there, but I wanted to make sure that wasn't the case. Okay. So, Dr. Neff, hi, I'm Dr. Bennett. So you were providing nurse practitioner services for a time in your clinic, correct?
So the nurse practitioner was correct.
Yeah, in your clinic.
You were, correct, yes.
And then you stopped doing that?
Yes.
And your reason for doing that was what?
So the nurse practitioner I was employing at the time was expecting, as she worked up until her due date, and based on the cost of employing a medical provider versus what we were actually making in the clinic, wasn't feasible to continue with that.
Okay, thank you. And you have recognized the error of your representation of physical therapy and physiotherapy, as your legal counsel pointed out, and you have corrected those matters.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. You stated that you experienced a ransomware attack that resulted in losing data and that this was a big part of the problem.
Yes.
That data loss occurred in March of 2022, correct?
Correct.
Okay. The reason I ask is because the majority of the patients' care under question that we looked at were subsequent to that, after March of 2022, between there and February of 2023. So I have I'm having difficulty understanding how that would have impacted care subsequent to that in terms of content of records or whatever. Yes, please.
So really the ransomware attack debilitated our entire office. It didn't affect the quality of care, but all of our office forms were gone. 3.5 years of our patient records were gone. So, and at that time, we were seeing probably 200 to 250 patient visits a week. So I was working almost all hours of the night and day to try to piece records back together. Caritas, unfortunately, has the option of fault, same as last treatment. And so in the process of months and months of trying to keep my clinic together, I mean, the extreme stress that it created on my staff, myself, and my family, it was difficult to make sure that every single patient record was perfect. And so what I initially did is I started piecing patient records back together. And unfortunately, in CD's case, that also a teacher just went through, we have stated the subjective portion, but
continued on. Okay. So I understand what you said. I'm sorry, I had to go through all of that, but from the date of the ransomware attack forward, you were creating patient records in, you know, a manner that a standard provider would be expected to be keeping records. It was not encumbered from that point forward by a ransomware attack itself. It was prior to that. Okay.
Correct.
And, you know, you mentioned ransomware attacks, staff turnover, billing provider changes, and so forth. You went through like three billers or more. And I guess I'm looking at this, and during that time where you're going through billing issues, did it ever occur to you to look at your fee schedule? I mean, that's my question here is your due diligence as a provider. We're going to talk about some of the specific details, but I kind of think that you probably should have been aware of what your fees were and what you were billing people as you were going through multiple billers over this time frame, right? I mean,
yeah, we had changed the fee schedule on the server that was attacked. We had aligned them with appropriate fees, and when we had to redeploy the old server, it's quite a bit of work to go in and change the fee schedule. That got redeployed and was just sort of functioning in the background.
Okay. According to your treatment and billing records, you treated this patient 78 times and billed the insurance company $63,945, according to the records that we have, which the insurance paid you $13,166.84. That sound about right? And you were paid by the patient another $4,100, thereabouts. So doing the math there, that was $764 per visit billing. And of that amount billed, you were billing manipulation at $158 per adjustment. Is this consistent with your records that you're to your knowledge?
Yes, that'll be said.
So about 20% of your office billing was for manipulation. Regardless of what the fee amount was, the part that was attributable to manipulation is about 20%. And that means that approximately 80% of the services that you were billing for during that time frame were for physical medicine modalities. That's how the math works on that, right? And this billing continued, as I said, through October of 2022. Looking at your records, there's no evidence that any physical medicine, I understand that it's alleged that it happened, but looking at your records, there is no evidence that over 80% of what you bill for is even occurred. And that's why I'm saying this happened over 8 months. How does that happen? I mean, I get it was stressful, but I don't see that as an excuse. I mean, my sense is that you'd kind of want to be on top of something when we're talking about numbers that big and that frequent.
Certainly. It was improper input in the beginning, like I mentioned, when I began creating the patient's note again. I didn't select a couple of buttons that documented the fact that those were being done. And at that time, my staff didn't document directly into the EHR, so that was an oversight on me not selecting those appropriate buttons to reflect services that.
Okay, and you know, we want to be sympathetic to things like that going on, but you understand that if this were an insurance fraud investigation, these would be very, very serious, with very serious potential consequences. And so we need to, you know, get to the truth here. And because it relates to the appropriateness of billing, we kind of need to go into the record,
certainly.
You billed for multiple physical medicine modalities, typically three every visit, and you state that they were delivered. You billed $180 for therapeutic activity, big numbers. Who performed those physical medicine modalities?
I see a Christian Kaiser under my supervision.
And is she a certified CA?
She is, yeah.
Is she registered with the state?
It is.
Is that confirmed with board staff? While she's looking that up, if I may, just for the sake of time. Am I hearing you saying that there was a CA that was delivering PT modalities, physical medicine modalities, and it was their responsibility to enter that into the record?
No, the way care tests worked, it didn't allow for a lower-level provider to input notes directly if they weren't a provider, a chiropractor or whatever. So it was my responsibility to make sure that those were entered.
Okay, so so you then it's on you that you were not doing that.
Right.
Okay. At the same, on multiple occasions, you said that sometimes the patient didn't have time to do the rehab. That was in your statement. Can you point out any time during your billing when the rehab portion was not billed for? At a time when the patient didn't do the rehab? And the reason I ask is because every billing that I looked at, 78 of them, there was a PT modality associated with it. So if the patient showed up, they didn't do rehab, then that should not have been billed for, correct? Okay, but it was, correct? Okay. And then you're billing $200 for an extremity adjustment, $99.43, that would have been performed by you in the treatment room, correct?
Correct.
And I noted that you were billing, as I said before, $158 for $98.941, which you performed, you manipulated the patient.
Correct.
How do you explain that your billing records and your treatment records show that you manipulated the patient's spine, but it shows no record that you performed the manipulation of the extremity, even though you billed $200 for it, I think, 55 times.
Same, I didn't select the appropriate button when it was time to list the charges and the excuses that was performed.
And this was going on over a period of 8 months while you're doing issues dealing with billing problems. Again, you see my point. I mean, this is something that if you're looking at billing, you probably should be looking at your billing, right? Okay. For the vast majority of the 78 visits, in the assessment section of your note, in the A of the SOAP note, you state no significant change or the same. You reported no significant change for every visit for over 3 months during the period of time between March 15th and May 22nd. And I can find no evidence then in over a year of treatment in 78 office visits you ever paused to reevaluate the patient to see why they weren't improving. How do you explain that?
Again, it goes back to the documentation. I should have been more vigilant at updating the assessment portion. I mean, part of my treatment is to assess the patient every time they come in. I don't do a full re-examination, but I'm constantly vigilant on their progress and how things are going. It's not reflective, right?
Okay. You have stated, and your legal counsel has stated, that you did not do, that the care that you gave was proper. Patients did not improve for dozens of treatments over a period of 3 months, and you did not stop to determine why the patient was not improving and do a reevaluation. Is that correct?
Well, according to the subjective portion, he was notating his improvement, but it didn't reflect in the assessment portion.
Okay, so in your record, you said no significant improvement.
Right.
Every visit.
Right.
For that entire time. And so to me, that speaks not to a billing issue. That speaks to a standard of care issue with regard to your responsibility as a provider. And, you know, I guess I would ask, what was your rationale for continuing the same treatment plan without stopping to say, okay, this is not getting where we need it to go. What's going on with this patient?
It was, you know, in the initial x-rays we saw what spinal conditions he had, we were working towards a more corrective posture, and we were working on more spinal correction, not necessarily specifically symptomatic driven. So my clinical rationale is to help improve spinal mechanics and overall spinal function, not focus on that.
Is that what the insurance company is paying you to do?
No.
Okay. So then you're now saying that you were billing the insurance company to accomplish a therapeutic outcome that is not what the insurance company is paying you for. They're paying you to treat a musculoskeletal condition, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah, so I don't have any further questions at this point.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Shelly, we need to hear from TV, but she's not here, so we can't question.
Madam Chair, if I may, board staff did confirm that the CA has Christian Kaiser has been registered since May of 2022.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Good news. All right. I have a couple of questions, Doctor. What are the therapeutic procedures you do in your office?
So we do therapeutic exercises, including stretches with a band, exercise ball. We have neck traction. We have full body vibration. We do wall chair exercises, and we do pre-core stretching.
What about therapeutic activities?
Yeah, those are exercises performed typically on the full body vibration.
No, not therapeutic procedures, but therapeutic activities. The 975-30 code?
Yeah.
That's totally different than the other code, the 97110, which is therapeutic exercise.
Yeah. We also have wobble boards and rocker boards that we use for our patients with balance.
So you don't do therapeutic activities. Therapeutic activities would be a station that you set up in your office, for example, that multiple stations, stair stepping, for example, the natural activity.
Right.
Okay, so you don't have those.
We don't have a stair stepper, but
no, that's just an example.
Right, but we do have the whole body vibration that they will step up and down and they will do.
You're aware that therapeutic activities require one-on-one direct contact. What you've mentioned a couple of times about audits, you're auditing the record, patient accounts. Try and make sure the record files. Who's doing these audits?
So it was internal staff. We have them looking at the patient's records, making sure we have everything that we get back into the system.
And how are they qualified to audit? What kind of experience, education?
They were just instructed by me to look at the patient records. If not, it may have been a strong term. We were internally
reviewing, and you were looking for what?
We were making sure that we could get their IDs, their insurance IDs, their updating their patient paperwork, making sure we have the demographic information correctly.
Not necessarily the billing or counting.
Yeah, we had the firm reviewing the billing records, but internally the staff was trying to make sure that the initial paperwork.
The firm being?
The billing company that we were using to help us clean up in the aftermath of the ramp.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. No other questions? Gentlemen, are we ready to deliberate?
We Madam Chairman, I appreciate efforts are being made to correct these obvious issues and these acknowledged exist, but this is a matter that I believe meets the threshold for disciplinary action. I think that there's negligence here. I think that it's the doctor's responsibility to be cognizant, especially after having found out that the area needs to be inspected and having three different billing companies, and I can't candidly see how that could happen, that somebody could be doing that and having billing problems and not be aware of what the billing problems are and the inadequacies in the billing system. And it looks, as I said, the question here is, do we have an obligation at this point to even consider referral for investigation for potential fraud?
Yeah, there's a real problem with the bills that are this high, and the patient's only paying a small portion. So if you're billing the insurance $200 for the extremity adjustment, right, and the patient's portion of their $77 that they pay each time is $10 on that, the write-off is extreme. And the reality is that you can't bill an insurance company for a service, charge a fee for a service that the patient isn't expected to have to pay. That would be fraud. And so there's a lot of what I've seen write-offs. There's no responsibility. You're getting the maximum reimbursement. The patient's paying a fixed amount that you've determined, I don't know how, but you have. So there's a huge amount that you are writing off that you just can't do that. Not real. It's a problem.
No, I have nothing to add. So.
Okay. I would entertain a motion then.
My dilemma is, how much of what we're hearing do we believe? And I want to believe that the doctor is conscientious and trying to do the right thing. And so, you know, the question is, do we make the referral for fraud investigation or not? You know, and my thought is that we would recommend that Dr. Neff actually be placed out a probationary period of time during which he could do some things to remediate and demonstrate to this board that he had remediated these issues before we were, you know, and let's give him the opportunity to fix the situation before we actually make the referral. And I guess my question about from our attorney about what our responsibility is here.
If the board, if there are allegations of evidence of criminal wrongdoing, you have to, then the statute requires the board to make that referral. But what allegations of evidence are is not well defined.
We have latitude.
Before you get to allegations of evidence, yes. Once you get there, no.
And allegations of evidence would be? We would have, I mean, can't prove anything, right? You're saying
I'm not entirely sure what that means, but that's what the statute says.
Yeah, we've had a lot of dialogue with auditors and multiple attorneys on that very point, as we all know. I don't know, Mr. Turbinson, as an attorney, what do you think our obligation is?
Again, I'm just going back to exactly what the complaint alleged. Shady practices. I'm not sure if this would really rise to a level just on the face of this complaint about any type of wrongdoing requiring referral. At most, it seems like it's an issue. It's a dispute we would just address and maybe look further into it to make sure it's not
issue that rises to a level of the referral.
At some level, I'm thinking too, the dramatic fees, the $200 for the adjustment. You know, I'm not judging that, but I know that there are a lot of management consulting firms that encourage that, even create doctor's fees. I don't know if that happened here, but it's enough to make me question the legal route at this point. I think we've got a lot of work to do, doctor. Lots of courses to take.
Okay, I think I'm ready to make a motion, if you would like one.
I would.
All right, I would move that Dr. Neff be placed on one-year probation. Yes, ma'am.
We can have to offer a consent agreement.
All right.
We can't take this on an initial action. Okay. So it would have to be a motion to move the matter to formal interview.
Or offer a consent agreement,
and
thank
if not signed, forward
to. Thank you. Thank you. So my motion would be to offer Dr. Neff, in lieu of moving forward to a formal hearing,
interview.
A consent agreement that would include voluntarily going on to a one-year probationary period during which we complete 6 hours of continuing education on ethics and business practices within 90 days, take and pass the jurisprudence exam within 120 days, and complete the PBI record-keeping program with full audit portion during that time frame.
Can I make a recommendation for the business ethics and practice? There's a PBI course for risk management, which is disorganized practice management. Example is billing errors, inappropriate marketing, scheduling problems, failure to obtain adequate informed consent, non-compliant with licensure requirements, non-adherence to basic rules or policies, and inappropriate decisions. Can you say all more on that?
Sounds pretty good. Okay, that's my motion.
Okay. I hear a second.
This is Ms. Sturgeon tonight, second. So, can I reread it so I make sure I got everything?
Before you do, I'm so sorry. I didn't interject, but would there be any consideration to reducing the probationary period from 1 year to perhaps 6 months?
The answer, I believe, since you're addressing me, is I don't think so, but we could make a stipulation with the provision to petition for early release with clear evidence of compliance.
Okay, so all right, I'll try and so 1 year probation with how many hours is that PBI? PBI risk management class, jurisprudence exam, and the PBI record keeping.
It's 10.
10 hours of the PBI risk management class, jurisprudence exam, and the PBI record keeping.
You want to do the extended on
with
extended.
With the opportunity for early termination after use?
I would say you could do early release upon proof of completing all of the MR-17 extended and receiving an aim letter from PBI to that effect.
Okay, that's the motion?
That's the motion.
And was that a second?
You had limits on the
time frame
for taking the PBI course and the jurisprudence. I think.
Yes, I did not put a time frame on the PBI because there's an audit and it needs to take as long as it takes. But yes, I want the, it was 90 days on the what eventually became the PBI risk management component.
Mm-hmm.
And 120 days on ethics and jurisprudence.
And will enough time have passed to have an audit at 6 months at that marker?
Depends on how diligent he is, I would think. We'd sure love to see diligence. We'd sure love to see diligence.
I'm very diligent. I've been very proactive.
Okay, good.
And is there any time frame for entering into the consent agreement?
You mean like perhaps 10 business days?
That fit everyone's schedule?
On receipt.
On receipt, yeah.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, is that?
Yes, that is
good. Second? Okay. All right.
Okay.
And the roll call
vote. Roll call vote. Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Mr. Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
I vote aye. Okay. Moving on.
So, are you clear on what is being asked of you here? Maybe Ms. Vanderveen could kind of instruct you on what goes from there.
So, you'll receive an order from the board of a draft consent agreement regarding all of this, the facts and the allegations. We can discuss that further in the negotiation process. And then you'll have, once we finalize those negotiations, you will have 10 days to sign. If you do not sign within those 10 days, the matter is automatically moved to a formal interview.
My attorney received a copy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chairman, before we move to the next tab,
shall we take a break? Okay, we'll break for 15 minutes and be back. Our next tab, 6. this is item 8, which is the initial action case number 2023-022, Thomas Christian Neset. Did I pronounce that right, Doctor? Are you present?
Jay Brown.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, it's Neinstead. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
And Jay Radmaker representing the doctor. You're...
All right. Would you like to speak a summary statement? I'm sorry, what was your attorney's name? Your attorney?
Jay Rademacher.
Mr. Rademacher, would you like to make a statement, an opening statement?
Madam Chair, would you like a board brief?
Oh, probably. Thank you. Details.
The investigation facts and allegations are improper or unnecessary treatment, incorrect diagnosis, and failing to create an adequate patient record.
Okay. Doctor, would you introduce yourself formally for us, please, for the record?
Yeah, my name is Thomas Christian Neinstead.
Okay. And your attorney, would you introduce yourself, please?
Jay Rademacher.
Mr. Rademacher, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. Members of the board, we respectfully request this board fully dismiss this matter at this time. Dr. Neinstead has been practicing since 2002 and is now employed with Gila River Healthcare. This is his first complaint, and it stems from a complaint made 3 years roughly after treatment. There's a reason why the law has statute of limitations, as it is to protect and ensure or safeguard fairness, timeliness, and to even preserve evidence. Here, there is nothing to support the alleged complaint. Instead, Dr. Neinstead is now facing 17 hours or education hours for record keeping that occurred for something almost 5 years ago. The investigation either did not look or did not find any recent record keeping errors. This leads us to what is the appropriate measure, or what should the board do to address something that occurred so long ago? Now, it is Dr. Neinstead does identify and understand that his SOAP notes were missing the objective and assessment section. However, this subpar was done more of a record keeping by exception in that practice due to the high volume of patients that were coming in. And then regarding the actual complaint in this case, had anything like this occurred, there would be much more documentation, not only in the record, but there would be witnesses, those type of things. So really, the board is only here for record keeping issues regarding something that happened 5 years ago. Currently, Dr. Neinstead is practicing at, like I said, the Gila River at Gila River Healthcare. And in practicing there, he is currently using the NextGen system And if this board were to look at any of his record keeping for since he has left the previous employment, this board will see that his record keeping is up to par. It just seems a little draconian that this board is now seeking, or at least its recommendation to the board, is 17 hours of continuing education, when clearly the problem has been assessed. He takes this matter very seriously, and he's almost essentially already had his punishment. And the fact that he has waited years, but to have this matter essentially brought before the board, he knows in his heart and mind what he did, and that he never hurt this patient, that these allegations are false, but he still had to live with the lingering fear of what was going to happen regarding this complaint in this board. The issue regarding documentation has been fixed. There is no reason for the continuing education hours that is being recommended, and we respectfully request this board dismiss this complaint outright. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the complainant with the initials PM present? Do we have any indication of the being that she... No, no. Okay. All right. Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yes, Mr. Rademacher, I think you mentioned the issue regarding record keeping has been fixed. Can you explain that?
Yes. Essentially, Dr. Neenstedt is no longer employed there. He is currently employed with Gila River Healthcare that uses the Next Gen system. And so his current record keeping is much more detailed, and the basis for use of that system essentially requires him to author more detailed notes. And so that's essentially our position, is that there may have been a subpar record keeping issue in the past in 2019, but currently and for the last several years, that hasn't been an issue. And my client could also address the board too, if you would like more specifics regarding that.
Sure. Dr. Neenstedt?
Yes.
Doctor?
Yes. Can you hear me? Do I agree with that?
Can you address it?
Oh, can I address it? Yeah. So I worked, prior to Gila River Healthcare, I worked at the Joint Chiropractic, which is very high volume. I would say, yeah, the record keeping was minimal. Most of those patients, I would say, were maintenance patients. But since then, since June 2020, I've been employed with Gila River Healthcare. We use Next Gen EHR record keeping system. I'm at a hospital, so all the doctors, all the medical providers here use the same system. So I would say it's adequate. The records are good here. I've been doing that for the last 5 years, almost 5 years now. Well, more than 5 years, actually. So that is my position.
So a follow-up to that, prior to June 2020, when you joined Gila River, were you aware that your record keeping was, as you acknowledge, subpar?
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Sure. Because the issue we're looking at here, one of the staff's recommendations here is about continuing education regarding record keeping.
Yes.
You mentioned that since joining Gila River Healthcare, you believe your record keeping has been fixed. But what I'm trying to get at is, did you understand while you were prior to joining Gila River Healthcare that your record keeping was did not meet a sufficient standard required of you as a doctor?
I suspected it.
Okay.
Yeah, I suspected it based on what I had done prior in other settings and the volume of patients. We tended to to try to get through our records or our note-taking as quickly as possible.
On an average day, how many patients do you see now at Gila River Healthcare?
10 to 20.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I just have one quick question for you, Doctor.
Sure.
So are you stating that this patient never had a knee problem and that possibly that's why testing the patient's knee?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all just fabricated?
No. I'm not stating that it's fabricated. My position is I don't remember, and I recognize that I did see the patient, I think twice, according to the notes, but I don't remember that incident. The nature of the joint chiropractic is people can see any doctor at any location. So I don't think his problem is fabricated. I'm just not convinced I was the one who did it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Shall we deliberate?
Madam Chairman, if I may, I agree with Mr. Rademacher that the PBI requirement at this point is more than what is necessary. I would comment that I don't think that the board, you know, I think that it would have been, Mr. Rademacher states that, you know, the board didn't bother to get more recent records, and that would be going outside of our, that would be inappropriate for a board to be doing that. That's not within our scope of authority, and so that's not really relevant here. So that said, my opinion is that probably a non-disciplinary advisory education
non-disciplinary
order.
Non-disciplinary advisory letter? Is that what you're looking for, or you want an order? I want
to continue education order is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Which is also non-disciplinary.
You want a non-disciplinary order for continuing that?
Yeah. And I don't know. I think more like some number of hours and give the doctor the choice of who the accredited vendor for record keeping is.
Like 6 hours?
I don't know. I mean, do you have an opinion here?
That's what I'm thinking. Non-disciplinary.
Yeah.
Yeah, 6 hours.
All right, then I'll put that in the form of a motion that we issue a non-disciplinary continuing education order to complete 6 hours of continuing education on documentation and record keeping to be completed within 90 days.
Is that in addition to the required 8 hours?
Yes. In addition to the required 12 hours per year that is already in place as mandatory.
Second?
This is insurance and I second.
You need a vote. No.
No, you don't need a roll call vote.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. The motion passes. Doctor, if you have any questions, you can contact Ms. Van Der Veen at the board office.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next tab, 9. 6 to 9, is that right?
That is correct.
All right, next on the agenda, item number 10, tab 9, the application for licensure of universal recognition for Clinton James Lowe, DC. Dr. Lowe, are you present?
I am.
Great.
Please come forward and unmute the microphone.
Great.
No, you're fine.
Are you represented by legal counsel?
No.
Okay. Ms. Van Veen, could we have your board brief, please?
The respondent submitted an application, or the applicant submitted a licensure application on August 23rd, 2024, for licensure by universal recognition. He answered yes to question number 3, or have you ever swore to no license? He answered yes, stating I failed to fill out a self-inspection for Nevada, which is a demographic form in 2021. The board's investigator obtained a veto of the charges and a settlement order from the Chiropractic Physician Board of Nevada. Also, the applicant answered yes to question number six, which states, in the last 12 months, have you ever been arrested or charged with or indicted or under investigation for a misdemeanor or felony requiring resolution in the court? His response to the question was yes, with DUI. Board's investigator obtained an affidavit of supporting the complaint from the Circuit Court County of the 7th Judicial District in Salvatore County. That information is in the memo and in your report. Respondent also answered yes to question number 7, which is the long question that you're also familiar with, which is answer the question below, even if the record of conviction or plea was sealed or expunged, the conviction was satisfied or forgiven. Have you ever been arrested? Have you ever entered into a stipulation or settlement agreement regarding any offense? Have you ever been convicted of any offense, misdemeanor or felony in any state? Have you ever pled guilty to any offense, misdemeanor or felony in any state? Have you ever pled no contendere to any offense, misdemeanor or felony in any state? He responded, answering yes to questions coming with a felony DUI. That he answered yes to question 8. Have you ever been evaluated, treated, or concealed for alcohol, drug abuse, or addiction as a condition of court order, stipulation agreement, including motor vehicle proceeds? He answered yes, and he said he's currently being evaluated for reasons he was. With that, that completes my report. Do you have any questions,
Penny? Doctor, any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. We've read all the materials you've provided for us.
Sure.
Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions for the doctor?
I think that he needs the opportunity to make a statement that he
wants. I'm sorry. Absolutely, doctor. Would you like to make an opening statement?
I would. I guess I made mistakes with driving at a time when I lost my job and went through a very severe depression. I'm currently under care and will continue care for the issue I have had. I've never let it affect me on the job. I continue to get my license. I can practice here in the state.
Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, Dr. Lohan, Dr. Bennett.
Hi.
So I've looked through the material, and I mentioned, actually, sorry to bring this up now, Ms. Vander, that some of the declarations, like on page 14 of 69, could we try to make them a little more legible? They're pretty blurred. I couldn't even read what they said, and maybe want to make a note of that for future. I'm sorry to bring it up now. I was going to
mention
earlier,
okay.
But so I'm sure that it's great that you're going through the treatment, and I'm sure you're being exposed to a lot of the information, I'm about to impart. But we have real concerns about recidivism. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes,
I'm sure you are. It's a real serious concern because recidivism rates after second offense
is very high,
very very high. And because of that, our diligence level relative to that needs to be very, very high, commensurate to that risk factor. And the other concern that I have is it looks as though you have been unresponsive in the past in terms of providing information to boards or that kind of thing.
No. Where do you...
Get
that.
Yeah, I don't mean to give you a generality.
I know.
The 2024 Wyoming DUI, I think what I read was that there was supposed to be some proof provided, and you were not forthcoming with that.
Proof to whom?
Don't know. I was in the records there. And then apparently we asked for an Arizona driver's license. Your Nevada license is expired, correct?
Nevada license is expired. I gave you an Arizona ID.
Okay, but not, that's what it was versus the driver's license.
Driver's license.
Are you able to drive legally?
As of right now, no.
Still under, because you're still under treatment?
Still treatment.
Okay. The other concern I have is that your jurisprudence score is pretty marginal on your exam, and the parts that you were the weakest on were the parts that we have the greatest concern about in terms of the subject, the topics, the questions you got incorrect, and so forth.
Okay. I reviewed the jurisprudence, and where I made the mistake, it was I misread what they were meaning. A lot of the questions, that was my fault.
Okay, so you did a self-audit on your answers and
yeah.
So forth. Well, that's good. I don't have any other questions. I'd make a comment that if we do elect to grant licensure, we should tie it to some demonstrated compliance. I think EBAS is a good idea, and maybe a course in ethics and professional. This is my thought.
Certainly. I have
no questions.
Entertain a motion.
I think that my motion would be to offer Dr. Lowe a disciplinary consent agreement for licensure that need to be completed prior to issuing the license, and that the requirements be to take the PBI course in ethics and professionalism and submit to the board an AIM letter. Ms. Vanderbilt can explain what that is to you upon completion of the course, and to take and pass the ethics and boundaries examination for the parts relating to substance abuse, unprofessional conduct, and professional standards, and that we delegate the authority to the executive director to approve licensure once the successful completion of those requirements have been met.
I had a clarification. Why is it disciplinary if the doctor isn't yet licensed?
Yeah, I was going to make a suggestion that I think the way you do it, it would be a sort of conditional licensure. The board doesn't have jurisdiction over unlicensed people, at least obviously the applicants, they have some, a conditional licensure with those terms, and then should he fail to abide by those conditions, then the board can move into there would be further steps to deal with non-compliance if it arises.
Yeah, I thank you for Mr. Truman for bringing that up. I don't think we can have the authority to discipline somebody who's not licensed. I think that's right. So then I would make the motion, I would amend my motion to rename the agreement to a conditional licensure agreement, and I would add to it that the under the delegated authority to the executive director to not only approve licensure, but in the event of lack of compliance within, 6 months? I don't know, 6 months? 3 months? How quickly would we want to see this? I'm sure he wants to get it taken care of. 2 months to 3 months?
90 days.
Mm-hmm. Then the executive director would move forward contemplating disciplinary action.
I think it's not completed within 90 days. We could just close
it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good.
But just for clarification on my part, I have 9 days to do this, then I can get my license.
Correct.
So you have to successfully complete all of these reports. So we'll send you a consent agreement Once you sign this consent agreement and the board signs the consent agreement, the 90-day clock starts ticking.
All right.
So not from today. It'll be from the date of the effective date of the order.
All right. Will you send me information where to obtain these clocks?
Yes, we provide all of that to you.
And he has 10 days to sign it.
And that assumes that the motion gets seconded and passed.
Yes.
Right. So, do you want to restate the motion for me?
Yes, happily.
Thank you.
Is your motion to offer conditional licensure upon completion of the PBI ethics course in professionalism, complete with an in letter, to take and pass the ethics and boundary examination for the parts of substance abuse, unprofessional conduct, and professional standards, and to delegate authority to the executive director to approve the licensure application upon successful completion of the PBI course, the EBAP examination, and then in the event of lack of compliance within 90 days of the effective date of the order, close the application, and that this should be signed within 10 days of the week.
You're good. Thank you. Okay.
Yep.
And I have a second.
They just served it tonight. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, doctor. Thank you. The next case, tab number 10, the application for licensure of universal recognition for Michael Reeves Taylor, D.C. Dr. Taylor, are you present today? Dr. Taylor? Okay, is not here in person or virtually. So, is there anything? And we have a board brief, please.
On June 20th, 2024, the board received an application for licensure by universal recognition from Michael Reeves Taylor. He answered yes to question number one. Have you ever previously filed an application with the state of Arizona? He answered yes, stating, sometime after I graduated, I took and passed the Arizona board. I never activated the license. I decided to stay in Utah. I'm unsure of the date. I'm guessing it was 1992. Dr. Taylor did not disclose a formal sanction taken by the Chiropractic Physicians Board of Nevada. Investigator pulled the NPD report for Dr. Taylor. It was discovered that sanctions had been taken by the Chiropractic Physicians Board of Nevada. That information is included in your packet. And then that is the entirety of the reasons that he is here over the board check.
Okay. Any questions from Ms. Vanderveen? Mr. Vincent, do you have any questions from Ms. Vanderveen?
No.
Well, what would you like to do?
Madam Chairman, in the absence of the doctor, and I think since we've all had the opportunity to review the materials, I agree with the staff's recommendation. I move that we offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education for licensure, take the PBI course ethics professionalism prior to the issuance of the license.
Okay, second.
This is
Sherbison,
I second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Motion passes, and Ms. Vanderveen, you will put the information to them. Moving on to tab number 11. This is an application for licensure of universal recognition for Mehran Afkar, D.C. Dr. Afkar, are you present today?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm present.
Very good. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Chair, would you like a board brief before he does that?
Getting that hard.
Yeah. Really hard on those.
I won't do it again, I promise.
The reason that this application is before you today is that during our review of the application, it appears that the applicant has not been licensed in another jurisdiction. But completed his exam, and his degree was conferred on July 16th of 2018. I believe he took his exam about in that same time frame. So the reason it's here before you today is to be consistent. Usually when we have individuals who've not been in active practice, like they've been retired and not engaged, usually the board requires them to take and pass the spec exam before we allow them to go into practice. So we're just looking for some direction from the board today on the application.
Very good. Mr. Dr. Asper, we've read all the materials. Would you like to make an opening statement?
No, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate.
Doctors, do you have any questions? Dr. Bennett?
Yes, Dr. Asper. This is Wayne Bennett. Would you just kind of fill us in on your story? Specifically, it looks like you graduated in 2018, but you have not done any CEs over the last 7 years. Have you practiced at all?
So I believe I graduated in 2020. And since 2020, I've been trying to complete the Part 3 boards. And so pretty much from 2020 to now, I've been just kind of trying to pass the Part 3 boards. And I have not been practicing anywhere. This is my first time applying for a license. And yes, I've taken all of the sections. I've passed all of the board sections. And yes, that's yeah. That's all I have to say, I guess.
Thank you. And what about continuing education? You say you've been apparently attempting to get through Part 3. Have you been doing any ongoing continuing education to that end, or what's the story there?
So I was under the impression that I would start the continuing education credits once I get licensed. So that's why I did not bother with the continuing education credits, because I was under the impression that was my understanding that kicks in when I start practicing and actually get licensed. But please correct me otherwise.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
That's correct.
No questions.
What? Liberation?
Yes, ma'am. I think that's what the spec exam is designed to, this is what's made for this set of circumstances. And we do need to see some catch up on the subject of continuing education. Mm-hmm. So if you're prepared for a motion, I would move that we offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement prior to licensure that Dr. Apkar take and pass the spec exam within 6 months with a 75% score or better, and complete 24 hours of continued education within 6 months to include record keeping, documentation, professional boundaries, billing and coding, and jurisprudence with board pre-approved courses, submitting proof of attendance within 15 days of completing each section.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Does Ms. Sherman's in a second?
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes. Doctor? Sandra Bean will, if you have any questions, you can call the board office. Sandra Bean will answer your questions. And we'll just need to comply with the request for your continuing education, okay?
Okay. So in the meantime, am I able to start practicing as long as I complete that spec exam within 6 months?
No, you're not able to practice until you actually get your license. And once you've completed all of the courses we've asked you to complete, Ms. Vanderbilt, you can go ahead and issue the license.
I'm kind of just confused. I don't understand why I have to do this, because my wife was in the same boat, and she didn't have to do any of this. So I'm just kind of confused why I'm having to do this these extra things before I get licensed.
When you say extra things, you mean like the 24 hours? There's a time gap between the last, from when you started to now when you want to practice. There's years in between. You have some catching up to do, and those are requirements before you're licensed to practice in the state. It's just that simple.
So you're saying that after the board, after I completed all four parts of the board, I had a there was a time limit that I had to
You have a pass for three grades. Yeah, that's correct.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? It's hard to hear you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I'll speak up or speak louder better. Have you passed part three? Yes. Part
Yes.
four?
Yes, I've passed
So
part one,
now.
two, three, and four, and also the PT as well.
So you haven't been to any other educational courses. You haven't had anything in record keeping documentation, any other courses, right? Have you?
Since I completed part three just I want to say last year in November. So no, I haven't, because I was under the impression that I needed to pass all my boards and then apply for my licensing, and at the same time I'm completing the continuing education credits. But I'm in that process. I am going to complete the continuing education credits and the record keeping and all of this. It's just I'm confused why I have to take the spec exam. I thought once I complete all of the boards, that's for life. I thought I don't have to take any kind of exam again for the board, at least. I'm just
That's correct.
confused. I'm just confused why I have why I have to take the spec exam.
Dr. Apgar, the purpose of the spec exam is to document clinical efficacy. This board has latitude in terms of what we require, so there may be variations from person to person. I don't know your wife's circumstances, and so we can't really compare. But given what we've heard here, that you have been at least, what, 5 years without having practiced, it sounds
No,
like you're.
that's not true. I have been practicing. My wife is a chiropractor, so we go over case studies. She gives me her consent, so we practice adjusting with each other. So it's not like I have been practicing, and because
Dr.
I
Apgar, what that means is, sorry to interrupt, but what that doesn't mean, that you're practicing your adjusting techniques. What it means is, as a physician, you have not been in practice treating, legally treating patients.
Okay.
And so that's what the spec exam is designed to do, to establish a baseline clinical competency so that we understand that you are not, that you're a safe practitioner in the interest of public safety.
I'm
And
just I'm just I'm
quite
just
candidly, please
isn't that the
don't
point of
interrupt
part four? Isn't that why we have isn't that the point of part four to test my
Doctor,
clinical
will you let me
skills?
finish, please?
Okay.
Thank you. So you have not practiced and you are struggling to pass part three. That gives me a lack of confidence in your ability to be safe to the public. And so this board has decided that it is necessary for you to meet the requirements that we have just set forth. So
I mean,
that's it.
I have passed part three, sir. I'm sorry, but I have passed part three.
Maybe I can answer Mr. Apgar's concern. If the board is not convinced that you are physically and mentally able to practice chiropractic skillfully, safely, you are not eligible for a license. And that's the end of the story.
It's that simple. You understand, doctor? So.
Okay, I just don't understand why am I not found eligible? I if I passed all part four, isn't that wasn't that required? Doesn't that fulfill the requirements of me
We
being
have
able?
latitude in determining whether you would be fit to practice. We're trying to make sure that the public is safe and protected. And this is our decision. It's final. There's nothing to discuss or argue about it. If you want your license, you'll do all of that. Okay? Thank you. All right. And you can, if you have any other questions, you can contact board office and Ms. Vanderveen will help you. Thank you, doctor. Okay, we will move on to our next tab here, which is 12, I believe.
14, 12, and the other.
Excuse me, we're tab 14. Okay. Number 11, business entity registration, Arizona Accident Chiropractic Plus. Carl Rowe, are you present? Dr. Rowe.
Dr. Rowe, would you please unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record?
Dr. Rowe, are you with us? You're muted, so you won't be able to hear. Dr. Rowe, second call. Should we go ahead with the table? See if he checks in. This is tab number 14, and number 11, business entity registration. So, Ms. Vanderveen, can we get a board brief, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. The facts and allegations are fact one, operating an unregistered chiropractic clinic, violating any federal or state statute, rule, or regulation in the application to the practice of chiropractic. And fact number three, any act or omission identified in ARS 32.1.4A.
Okay. Dr. Rowe, are you there? I will not be able to ask the question. Do you have any questions for Ms. Vanderveen?
I have a question for Ms. Vanderveen or Mr. Sure. Hutchinson. As I read R4-7-1401E2, it says that the applicable language here is that an owner, an officer, or director, if they've had a license to practice any profession, refused, revoked, surrendered, suspended, or restricted by a regulatory entity in this or any other jurisdiction for any act that constitutes unprofessional conduct pursuant to this chapter. And it also says in subsection four, an owner, an officer or director has surrendered a license for an act that constitutes unprofessional conduct pursuant to this chapter in this or any other jurisdiction. So my understanding is that Dr. Rowe did, in fact, have a license and did surrender it. And that, to me, it's prima facie. It's clearly evident that he is not qualified, therefore, to own a practice in the state of Arizona. Is that correct?
Under the rule, the rule that action would disqualify him from being a owner of a business.
I'm sorry, I did not understand that.
Sorry, what was the rule that you quoted?
It's R4-7-1401, subsection or paragraph D, subsections 2 and 4.
Yes, so that's correct. That action, he's ineligible to be an owner, officer, or director of a business entity.
Madam Chair, I'd like to state for the record, it appears that Dr. Rowe has turned on his camera and has unmuted himself.
Oh, good. Dr. Rowe, are you with us? Dr. Rowe?
Yes.
Okay, there you are.
I'm here.
All right, would you like to make an opening statement?
I'm not sure how you want me to respond.
Well, we've read all the materials. What I'd like you to do is just, if you have anything to add to what we already know, bring it forward now.
I can't understand.
You have things you want to add on to what they already know.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I misspoke a little bit earlier. He's not ineligible, not strictly ineligible. It's a ground for denial. So the board can still grant it. But the board may deny it under those circumstances.
So if they may, not a shall. But the language is there for a reason.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions for me? Excuse me, for Dr.
Rojo. Dr. Rojo, this is Dr. Bennett. Did you overhear the language out of the rule that I just read into the record, sir?
I understood.
Okay. Do you understand, therefore, that according to this language, you're not really legally allowed to own and operate a chiropractic clinic in the state of Arizona?
Now, is there a way I can remedy that?
The problem is that you have surrendered your license previously, and that we can't undo.
Actually, what I did was I didn't renew them because I decided to get out of practice.
Give me a moment here. The information I have was that you surrendered your license in 2009 for improper billing and records. Is that not correct?
No, I didn't surrender my license. I decided not to renew them. And I made that statement at a hearing with the board.
Are you saying at the time in 2009?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Vanderveen is looking something up, but in the meantime, it appears, sir, that we have been kind of going back and forth with you over quite a period of time here with regard to getting you registered as a business entity, and that there's both the business entity as defined within this chiropractic purview, and then there's also there's no evidence with the Corporation Commission that there's a business called Accident, AZ Accident Chiro. So can you just kind of explain what the problem is, why that process has not been able to be completed, despite the many efforts that have been put forth in that regard?
They don't know it's Zero Chiropractic. They just think it's Arizona Chiropractic Plus.
Oh, it's actually under Zero Chiropractic and has been since probably 1980.
I think there's a trade name, but the actual name of the business is
okay. Yeah, the name. So
yeah,
that's what I was doing. It's golden. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that Dr. Rowe's point is pivotal. I mean, the language is, you know, the language is specific, and he's alleging that he did not surrender his license. So I think we need to kind of maybe pursue that a little bit. Bear with us, sir.
I have 1 year left on my lease. Is there any way I can keep the office until the lease ends, and I'll sell the office or do whatever needs to be done?
We're kind of waiting. Before we get to that point of deliberating on what needs to be done, let's make sure that we have our facts correct at this end so that we can move forward with more confidence.
Okay.
So I have a consent agreement and order for surrender of license for case number 2008-63. And it was signed by Carl Rowe on 2/19/09. And the order is that it's hereby ordered that the license number 836 issued to Carl Rowe for the practice of chiropractic in the state of Arizona has been deemed a surrender effective February 24th of 2009.
Okay. Well, those are the facts.
So, Doctor, your license was surrendered. You didn't decide to work at Rapids and not renew. Right? You signed a document to that.
On the way to Flagstaff, I stopped at the attorney's office to sign the papers. And it was hot. My wife said, don't leave me out here in the heat very long. And I said, I won't. I'll just go in, sign, and come right back. And that's what I did. I did not surrender my license. That is a fact. I decided not to renew them. That is a fact.
Doctor, there's a document that you signed to the contrary.
I understand. I didn't read them. I didn't take the time. It was a hot day.
I understand, Doctor, that there are consequences, and the net result is that you surrender your license.
Will you say that again, please?
Yes, I said, I understand that was a problem, but the net result is you did sign the document that you surrendered your license, okay? So it's a record surrender. If that's not what you meant to do, I'm sorry, but that's what you did.
And it was associated with a board action.
It was associated, Doctor, maybe you can recall, it was associated with a board action. It wasn't a failure to renew. Okay. Any other questions, Dr. Ferguson?
So, Madam Chairman, Dr. Rowe has posited that he's got a year's lease left, and he was asking if he could keep his practice open for some period of time and find, you know, spell it and so on and so forth. I believe that, so I have two questions. One's kind of a point of law, but the first one is, the board recommendation has been that he be advised to cease and desist and have 90 days within which to divest himself of his business. I would be willing to consider a longer period than that, but my concern is that the cease and desist part happened. Dr. Rowe, do you have a practitioner in your clinic at this time?
I do.
And who is that, sir?
Dr. Scott Ulrich.
Okay.
So just to confirm, you are not back to PC patients, correct?
Say that again, please.
So just to be clear, you are not practicing, but the doctor that you
No, I haven't. Patients. No, I haven't seen a patient for, well, since I didn't renew my license, I discontinued practicing.
So, any other questions?
Well, the other second question I had for I'll direct to Mr. Hutchison is the other recommendation is that this be reported to the Chandler Police Department. And so I would seek legal counsel on that issue.
We need to go into executive session.
Want to, and I don't think it'd be a long discussion. It's operating, I think for an unlicensed business entity is a classic felony, which does kind of create the reporting requirement because now you're aware of it, you're aware of the application, you're aware that the application is being denied, and that around.
So this, now that it has come to our attention, we have confirmed the facts of the matter. There's no denying that this is the issue, and we have no choice but to respond to it. Is that the general?
I missed what was going on with the Chandler Police Department. You mentioned that, but I didn't understand what was happening.
Operating a business without a license, Doctor, has escalated your problem to a new level. The board is required to report anyone who practices without a license, or any business that practices without a license, which is what you have here. That requires us to turn you over, or the business, to proper authorities. You understand?
No.
It's a classic felony to do what you're doing, apparently. All of the facts point to that. We have no latitude. We like it when we have latitude, but we don't have any right here. And so my understanding, maybe Mr. Curtis could help us too with that.
Yeah, that's my understanding too. And we have an obligation to report.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm still trying to figure out what happened with the Chandler Police Department.
Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened, Doctor, but may I respond?
Please.
Nothing has happened at this point, Dr. Rowe, but what we're saying is we have now basically discovered that you are very likely guilty of a Class 6 felony by operating an unlicensed business. And in so doing, we are required by law to report you to the proper law enforcement jurisdiction, which in your case is the Chandler Police Department. And we have to decide what we need to do with you with regard to our responsibility in having you stop doing that.
The Chandler office, I had that leased out to, Seth, I can't think of his last name. He was in there for like 9 or 10 years. I was prepping it for sale when Dr. Day called up and wanted to rent it. I said, why? And he said, well, I want to do a neuropathy practice. And I said, Dennis, this is not the right area and this office is not ritzy enough to draw what you're looking for. We talked
about it. I'm going to have our attorney explain it to you in the simplest terms, okay? That'd be all right, please. We don't want to confuse you more, but you need to know what the facts are.
So I misspoke a little bit with respect to that criminal statute. 32934L. Provides that a business entity that offers chiropractic services pursuant to this chapter without complying with the registration requirements of this section is guilty of a Class 6 felony. So the liability is not necessarily on Mr. Rowe himself. It's the business entity. But I don't want to get into derivative liability, however that shakes out. But the statute, it criminalizes the business entity itself.
What I'm trying to say is Dr. Day leased the office from me. I have not had that office for many, many years. I only own the building.
But your business name is who he's operating under, is that correct? The business name.
I think it had to be under his name. Obviously, I'm not a chiropractor anymore, so how could I have a chiropractic office there?
Just for clarification, I think it does need to be, you need to direct staff to report this to the appropriate law enforcement office. We can figure out, based on the address provided, the appropriate jurisdiction to refer the business entity to. So if there's another location that's in Chandler and we need to determine the location of the current, staff can address that after you make your determination so we don't get too lost in that we're dealing with the chiropractic business entity application.
Okay. And with that, I'll entertain the motion.
Mr. Turbinson, I would defer to you.
I move that pursuant to Rule 4-7-1401B, the board deny registration to CRO Chiropractic operating as its trade name.
AZ Accident Chiro?
AZ Accident Chiropractic Plus. And further move that, or for the reasons stated under R4-7-1401D2B4, and further move that staff prepare a cease and desist letter to the entity to refrain from the practice of operating a business practicing chiropractic medicine and determine which jurisdiction this should be reported to for operating an unlicensed business entity, and I think that's it. There's a basis for discussion on the divestment. I don't know why we would order that, so I'm not sure. I don't know anything in our rules. We can deny, obviously, the licensure. So I'm not sure how, what basis we'd have to order a divestment or recommend one.
You could just, it's probably the best list of divestment on the
list. Okay.
A second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Very good. The motion passes. Doctor?
Did he need to have explained to him what just happened?
Yeah. Doctor?
Yes.
Hello? You understand what happened? You understand what's happening? Do you need us to explain it? Did you understand the motion?
No, I did not.
Okay, we're going to explain it to you.
Doctor, say that again, please.
I'm happy to do that. That would be easier.
Thank you, Dr. Levine.
The application for the business entity has, the board has denied that application, and as such, have directed staff to send a cease and desist to the business entity because you are practicing without being registered with the board prior to seeing patients at that location. In addition to that, because it is a Class 6 felony to operate a chiropractic entity without a license, they've asked staff to report those allegations to the appropriate law enforcement for further investigation.
Do you understand, Doctor? If you have any further questions, you can call the board office and the standard beam will help you, okay?
I'm sorry.
Do you understand?
All right. That concludes this matter. Next on our agenda will be task item number 16, our executive director's report. Ms. Sandra Bean, please present your report.
I'm including my report in your board materials. The first item is pending complaints by fiscal year and priority. So as you can see, 2025 continues to grow up to 21 total reports or complaints. the vendors who I've worked pretty consistent with past years. In terms of open cases, we have 67 open cases. We have 9 cases left in 2023 that still need to go to initial action, and then 11 total cases. There are 32 cases in 2024 that still need to go to initial action for a total of 27 cases. 33 of those are open. And then for 2021, currently there are 21 cases that still need to go to initial action that you can turn to today. So I'm working through that. And then total cases closed by priority by board meeting. The last meeting you heard 6 cases, we closed 5. This meeting there are 11 cases on the agenda. So I'm getting back to our average. This is just a slide of the total number of cases, the closed cases. You can see that after today, we'll have a majority of 2023 cases closed.
Ms. Fendi?
Yes.
I don't know where you are in your presentation.
Oh, I'm on slide number 5.
Okay, thank you.
So, like I said, the majority of the 2023 cases, we pretty much wrapped up today. There's a couple just outstanding that will be addressed in the next meeting. And so we have 33 left for 2024, and then we have 21 for 2025. Total number of cases over 180 days. The number is down to 47. And then total cases pending by formal hearing date are continued. We really only have 4 cases that have been continued and then 1 that is under an interim order. For licensure, you can see that we've received 81 applications so far this year and we've issued 66 licenses. For renewals, we've received so far this year, so starting the renewal process in November, we received to date 496 renewals. But I'm really excited to report that with this new process and the additional staff, that in the majority of cases, they are being turned around in 1 to 2 business days from when they submit that application. So Amber's doing a great job in getting those and Nikki as well as the licensing administrator of getting those turned around and making those a priority so that individuals aren't waiting for their renewal application. So if you all remember a few years back, there was a long, long wait when we had everybody review in December. Then it was 4 to 6 weeks for us to process those, and they have over 10 surrounding. Sometimes the same day, if not
today.
We don't have an update for CE applications, but we just received a large partner, and I know that we are getting ready to work on the association. Working to that, and that is another item that's in the process of transitioning to different stuff, so we have more eyes on that as we all kind of move into these different operational roles. I provided you with our financial information. Not much has changed there. We're still, on trajectory with what I kind of projected. So I don't foresee any concerns there with our budget at this time. February's revenue was not quite as significant as I had originally projected, but it could be just that February is a shorter month. We have less things coming in February. So we'll keep monitoring that, but you're still operating under our appropriated amount at this time. So that's just kind of, you can kind of see on this other chart that, revenue is just a little bit below where we projected, but also our expenditures are below your appropriated. That's the majority of my report. As I've provided you historically. We are fully staffed at this point. No worry, no changes. We should be relatively stable. With that, if you have any questions for me.
Under expenditures, can you just kind of explain, like, for example, what are personal services? What goes into that?
That would be staff salaries, benefits for staff.
And then employee related?
That's employee benefits, okay. What the board has to pay for.
So when it's salaries and money to benefits, right?
Right.
And then operating, everything.
Just the daily, yeah.
Okay. What are our licensing fees, like the federal licensing board, the fee we pay, right?
So those would be like training and membership.
I'm sorry?
The training and membership.
Okay. Sales charges for services?
It would be anything that we purchase, like subscriptions, licenses. Like your Adobe licenses, your software licenses, we pay for those monthly.
Okay, thank you. You're welcome. Any other questions? Tab 17, next on the agenda. The Assistant Attorney General provides us an update. Mr. Hudson.
Yes, so there's not much to it. The Arizona Supreme Court revised its ethics rules for government attorney. And so we're just sending out, the AG's office is sending out basically a scope of services to all of our agency clients. Nothing about our representation has changed at all. This is just a sort of written scope of services, same way that like private attorneys will give this to clients. Now we're doing it.
Okay.
I would like to move into the executive session to discuss that this letter and discuss some specific points of legal advice.
All right.
Okay.
I'll second. This is
Mr.
Sherman.
Okay. We'll go into executive session.
I just want to
make those people stay here for another bit.
Anyone who's attending as far as the requirements for their license can now be dismissed. Okay. 12:36 and we are back in meeting. We're going to proceed to our next tab item, which is 18, Ms. Everdeen.
Actually, can we go back to tab 13 real quick? I just have a couple things that I forgot.
Okay.
I need a motion to adopt the board meeting calendar for 2026.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I would move that we adopt the board meeting calendar for 2026 as submitted.
This is Ms. Sherman, and I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then also, I wanted to point out in your materials, we received a letter from the International Academy of Neuromuscular Skeletal Medicine regarding use of NBCE diplomat board certified chiropractic physician and how it could be used to mislead the public. I'm just bringing this to your attention. And if there is action you'd like to take or what you'd like to do regarding this topic.
Madam Chair, I read that letter and I found it interesting. And I, in spirit, I kind of agree that we don't, that anybody who's licensed to practice in the state of Arizona is a diplomate of the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners because they have that certificate. And it is oftentimes used in a misleading way to make it appear that the doctor is something more than just a licensed PC. But I don't know that we have any legal, I don't know that there's anything, if we decided, okay, well, we say that's not an acceptable marketing practice, is it, I mean, what do we reinforce, that it's misleading advertising, or, you know, what's the enforceability should we take a position on?
For discussion, but in the legal field, you can't say board certified unless there is a board that actually does certification of, you know, criminal law. You can be board certified criminal. I couldn't say that. Mm-hmm. That'd be misleading. So that there would be some basis to say it's misleading from a non-medical view. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if there's a rule or this is just a helpful resource to kind of store in our back of our minds if we do come across a situation where it is misleading the public.
Is the phrase board certified misleading?
I mean, I think their position would be, I am board certified.
In this letter that they were concerned about.
I'm sorry, say again.
Is there a quite a few that they listed in this letter that they were concerned about?
Can I
ask a question of our legal person?
Something that should the board
perceive
to be a substantive
force?
Yes. Could you put that in
writing? Okay.
Just joking.
Substantive policy.
I think you might want to have further discussions and maybe open it up to the public and have some discussions, consider rules as part of rulemaking.
So for this
after
point,
further research, maybe.
So at this point, maybe just the minutes show that discussion was engaged in relative to the content of this, and that it was determined that further discussion would.
You can agendize it for another meeting.
Correct.
Let's do that.
So noted. Those are my last two items. I apologize.
Okay. And since I don't have anything to report, no questions to ask, I think we got it taken care of already. Does that conclude our business for today?
Hang on. Let me double check the agenda. Madam Chair, mm-hmm. I just believe we need to establish the future meeting date, and so the next board meeting would be scheduled for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, at 9 a.m. at 1740 West Abbey Street in Morgan City.
Excellent. Okay.
You can adjourn the meeting.
Yes. This time.
We have a call for the public.
No, we don't have a call. This meeting is adjourned.